Welcome everyone to another episode of Classroom to Staffroom, where we talk all things teaching. I'm joined by my co-host Jodie Epia.
How are we all?
I'm Miles O'Kane, and we look forward to taking you all along for the ride.
Welcome back to another episode here with Classroom to Staffroom. I'm Jodie Epia, and I'm here with my brother in arms, Miles O'Kane, the brother over here, the O-Train, who's pulling in the station right now. We're just going to get some things come up and pumping.
Yeah, he's done it.
Let's jump aboard, eh? Let's just get this thing going. I thought today we're just going to have a look at teaching as a sense of the ups and downs of teaching, but also I think one of the big things we've got to look into is why do we get into the profession and why do we actually like doing what we're doing? And so the main topic of today is just to have a look at the joys of teaching. What are the things that we get out of being a teacher, and how often do we see all the joys that we see? So that's one of the big things. But before we jump into that, brother, I've got a couple of questions, and these are just
can I just I am very impressed with how we're taking charge here, Mr. This is very good. So I'm a little bit worried where these questions are going, but mate, take it away.
But some of these questions are well out of left field, got absolutely nothing to do with the topic, but let's just have a go at it anyway.
Yep.
I say question number one, brother, is what was the most important lesson that you've ever learned over your years?
I think, look, my parents being Irish immigrants, they were very much big on having a work ethic and instilling a work ethic into us. I think having gone through that and realizing if I can put my mind to stuff and have a work ethic behind it, you can do pretty impressive stuff in life.
Absolutely.
I think that was important. Yeah, what about yourself?
Oh, right. I think work ethic is something coming from a big family. But mum and dad were very, very, especially dad. Dad was nose to the grind, worked hard every day, come home, make sure his family was looked after.
Yeah.
Mum done the same, but in the opposite way that she looked after us as just being the mum, making sure that everything was ready for us, prepared, whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't just look after us. She looked after practically our house was a stopping at any time from anyone, bro.
Yeah.
So just having hundreds of people around at one time, it just was just normal. So I think the catering, looking after people, making sure people, I think that's one of the biggest things that I would pick up from my parents is just looking after people, making sure they're looked after properly. Always let them, when they leave, to make them so that they leave with a memorable experience that you've had with them.
Yeah.
So that's one of the big things.
That's big though. And I know, I mean, it's a sense of community, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's only sort of mum and dad and my brothers here when I grew up, so we're always a small family.
Mm.
But then my wife, from the African culture, they're very big on family as well.
Yeah.
And I know we all get along very well, but it's great having a lot of people around you. It's a good support network, which I think my family was great growing up, but it was never an extended family. Mm. So you never, when you go to functions and stuff, you're always sort of one putting in effort to meet new people. Whereas I go to these things and you kind of know everyone already, and it's nice. Like it's something I've missed out on growing up in my life.
Yeah. I think the beautiful thing, I'm one of nine. So having big families and having cousins and extended family around, it was just so nice. You just learned to get on.
Yeah.
Even if space was tight, you just learned to get on and just make it happen. So
what number are you?
I'm number five, bro.
You're number five? What's the difference from in age, oldest to youngest?
Oldest is 50, what is he? 52, 53?
Yeah.
And it just goes down. And the youngest is, what is it? 28, 29?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's a decent app. And then you're the only one in Australia, aren't you?
Only one. Oh, no. The youngest one is in Australia as well. He's over in Perth. Over in Melbourne.
Yep.
He's working up in the mines, flying from Melbourne to some mine, not too sure where.
Making those
trying to make him, trying to make him come over to Perth, but I see how it gets on. Just he's happy where he is at the moment. So, yeah. It's a big thing, though, leaving where you're from to come to a totally different country outside of your comfort zones. But I think that's the reason why we left was to actually come out of our comfort zones and experience something new. And we deliberately said we won't go home within the first 5 years, and we didn't, because we know too many people who come to Australia and go back the following year.
I have heard that, something about the two-year mark when you go to leave a country the first 2 years, as it would do, come on real strong with homesickness and stuff, but then if you can sort of grind through that, 5 years is even bigger.
Mm.
And then stuff starts to settle down a bit. But it is, because you're starting everything from scratch, a whole new communication network, your support network. Yep. It's a lot of stress to begin with.
Oh, that's the thing. Once you get over that two-year hump, you sort of start putting roots down into the ground and you start knowing certain people or knowing certain areas, and everything just becomes like, oh, well, you know, been here for a while now. So what am I clicking up, 14 years?
14 years.
Yeah. I didn't think I'd be here that long, but yeah, 14 years.
See, we're in the last five and the last 14. And you're here for good now, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much. I think if I die, I'll probably die back home. But if I die here, I die here. No problem.
Let's hope that's not for a while, mate. The other thing I was going to say is discipline, having a strong self-discipline. Ooh, yes. And I think through playing team sports growing up, I learned that if you hold yourself to a certain standard, the phrase going around how you do anything, how you do everything and how you do the small things. Mm. Like, I do believe in that. If you're doing stuff consistently, and it sounds cliched, if you're doing stuff consistently over time, you can gain momentum.
That's it.
You know, but it's those small habits, I guess. And I think I had that. I didn't. Like, I was quite reckless when I was young, but there was always underneath, I think there's a discipline there. Mm.
As it says in this particular awesome book that I read, it says, if I can trust you in the small things, then I can give you bigger things to do. But it's that whole just making sure you're doing the little things right all the time. Not just spasmodically, sometimes here and there.
Mm.
So looking after people, catering and looking after people.
Mm-hmm.
When I cook for multitudes. When my wife cooks, she's got that fancy, real fancy type of cooking going on.
Yep.
But I'm multitudes, so cook heaps. That's her. But mind you, she's one of seven, so she's used to having big feeds with families as well. So
it's nice though, isn't it? Yeah. Getting everyone involved. My question to you. You ready?
Mm.
I was talking to for the listeners out there, had our first kid, 7 months old, found it hard choosing names. When you were choosing names for your kids, you were teaching at the time, were you? You started teaching.
Mm.
Were you going, and I know you're very traditional, was there names of students you had taught that you're like, I can't do that?
Mm.
I did. Like, I was like, this just sounds great. But then, because you may have had a bad experience with that student, or it's even like I got petty, it's like, that name's been taken,
uh-huh,
and now I can't use it. Were you going through stuff like that?
Ours is more traditional, but there were certain names that I steered away from, based off the pure fact that I may have taught a certain person with that name.
Flow-on effects of teaching. It's not just about holidays, mate. Get more work to do. Can't name my children certain names. It's never ending.
There are certain names, like, I know Jordan was, that's the name of my youngest brother.
Yep.
He got named that because Jordan was running around with the basketball, dunking on everyone at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things where that name became quite predominant around the world. I mean, there's a lot of Jordans.
I think he was right at basketball, that Michael Jordan guy, yeah?
He's not bad.
Played for a year or two. A few of those championship rings. Yeah, would have been a popular name. All right, my man, what do we got today?
So before I do, bro, I've got this weird question and I wanted to ask it anyway.
I was trying to steer away from this question.
I don't know, bro. And that's simply this. What colour is the colour of a mirror, bro?
I can never get your riddles, man. And I sit there and I try to deviate away from them. What colour is a mirror?
Yeah.
Is clear a colour? Whatever's looking back at it.
Yeah, see, that's it, bro.
Yes.
I don't know.
Is that it?
I don't know the answer.
Oh. You think?
Well, I would say that.
You think? Okay, I've never been good at like riddles. Do you reckon there's a certain amount of logic to riddles?
There is some, but then there's those real outside left box, not even inside the stadium sort of answers as well.
Okay, so I shouldn't be questioning my profession being a math teacher, which is based on logic, because I can't do riddles. So ever since I've known you, you've been the riddle master, and I'm like, there's that underlying logic to him, and unless I'm sitting there reading through it and checking the answers,
yeah.
I can never get it, so I'm locking it in. Either clear or whatever's staring back at you.
Yeah, I'll go whatever's staring back at you because, I've never really considered that question, to be honest. Like, if someone said, like, what colour?
How does a question like that come up? You're just sitting there driving home and what colour's a mirror?
Yeah.
Just the inner workings of the epia.
Things just bouncing around there somewhere.
Be fascinating to be in your mind for a day. That's a good question, though. It's a good question.
All right, as we said in the beginning, brothers, we just talked about the main focus of today is in this episode is to reflect on the joys of teaching. You know, teaching is such a diverse profession in the sense that we wear many different hats at many different times. Sometimes we wear multiple hats at the same time. Just wanted to open up this can of worms in the sense to have a look at, because we have such busy lives. We actually do. For most teachers, days start quite early. There's a lot of stuff that goes on during the day, and then even after the school is finished, some teachers will continue to work to a certain time. Like me personally, I've sort of steered away from that.
Yeah.
And we also have various scenarios that we have to face on a daily basis, which could also tarnish the way we look at, we only see the negatives or the not so good stuff of teaching. But in all honesty, brother, the question is simply, what are some of the joys that we find in teaching? What are some of the things that you've come across where you can see that little that little bit of joy, either joy yeah. for yourself or joy for a student or joy for another teacher
yeah.
or even a parent.
Okay. So I think probably similar to you, I got into teaching because I wanted to make a difference in people's lives. And I think I always chose harder to staff schools or tougher schools because that's where I felt my personality would have the biggest impact. I think, sure, getting a student to understand a math situation or a math problem in context is great. But just having the student that you'd normally not see in class taking overcoming challenges, I think I find that. And that's what keeps me going. And I think it's, without going on a rant, I love teaching. I do. And the day I don't, I stop enjoying it. I'll change professions. But I think you're right. I think it's something in humans, the negative bias or whatever the terminology is. We normally do look for the negatives. And that's a conscious process for me. I've got to try. And you're a lot better than I am, but looking for the positives, which can be tougher. And I think you're right, with especially now in teaching being such a dire situation with the supply, and not pointing fingers here or there, but you can definitely get crushed with all the stress going on. I think it's important, especially times like this, is just to focus on little wins. So for me, having students in class and just challenging themselves is a big one for me.
Nice.
What about yourself?
I'm looking at, for me, the joy that I find is when you see just that one kid that, say that he has a very bad relationship with a certain topic, let's say math, and just to see the smile on his face, and that sort of makes you go like, yeah, we got this. And then you start seeing the kid become confident and then start saying, oh, is it? And then from the is it becomes, oh, it's. And then from the it's, it goes, oh, that's easy, it's this.
That's good.
So watching that process in a kid who at the start was saying, oh, I really dislike this topic, I really don't understand it. To see the little parts of, and I think it was this young boy that I got in one of my classes, just his eyes light up when he got it. He still had a bit of doubt because he had to double check to see if it was the answer.
Yeah.
But then as time progressed, you just saw that he just like, oh, it's this. Oh, that's easy. And this was a kid that absolutely disliked math. And coming off the back of our parent teacher interviews of last night, just hearing feedback from parents was a joyful thing of being a teacher. Hearing the parents say, oh, my kid comes back and starts telling me about how to do this, how to do that. And they're going, oh, I'll have to go back into my memory of how to do the percentage or how to do whatever else. And so the interaction that's creating is the kids finding joy in it, which then rubs off onto the parents. And the parents are like, wow, look at this kid. He's getting involved.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, it just creates this big cycle of positivity towards the kids doing well, the teachers supporting, and the parents are like on board. Right. It just.
Well, it's that wave effect, isn't it? The multiplier effect multiplies out. I think limitations. I think a lot of the students we deal with at the moment, and probably similar schools we've dealt with in the past, students at those schools have probably got them in their mind gone through a lot of rough stuff in life. So they've put their pigeonholed themselves into a certain way of life. I think when they start to see they can do, and it's not getting those transferable skills so you can get the kid in the door, they can start to do stuff. They realize they got the power to change their life. Now, there's people that have been dealt some brutal hands out there, so I'm not saying everyone's equal, but you can show that, go, okay, this is whatever, you know, it is, but we can all work together to get to a better place.
Oh.
And I think it's through education or whatever, education should be the leveling playing field where everyone's equal and they can build from there. Unfortunately, you know, everything else gets involved. It doesn't happen that way, but they can overcome those self-limitations. I think it's huge.
Brother, and as I was talking about it before, it's like that circle of life sort of thing. It's almost like that whole saying of, you know, takes a village. And it practically is. So if you can have the parents on side, the kid on side, teacher on side, you can actually move and make the movement a lot quicker because everyone's supporting one another. Kid feels absolutely amazed about himself or herself, which then feeds them into more success. And as we know the saying, success breeds more success, which breeds more success. So you see these kids who come from this whole, as you were saying, this disbelief in themselves or this doubt that they have, all of a sudden just break away from them. And just it might just take one thing that unlocks their, wow, this is cool, this is easy. So right now, my very first question that I ask the kids at the beginning of every year is, what is your relationship like with whatever topic? And put your hand up if you've got a bad relationship with it.
Yeah.
And 90% of the kids put their hand up.
And bad relationship with math? Bad relationship, okay.
And it's just because of their lack of understanding or they couldn't get something, whatever it was. And then to see 90% of hands are up at the beginning. And then I asked that same question last week and the hands came down. And I said, what's the difference? And the whole thing was, it's just they're getting it. They're understanding it. It's the step-by-step process, isn't it? And I think I said to them, I said, I'm so sorry that I'm insulting your intelligence because I'll allocate some work. Yep. And they'll go, oh, so this is so easy. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. So sorry that I'm testing you in this sense. But yeah, it's these little things. I think that's the little part of joy that I find in teaching is just when the kids look at you in a way that like they, I'm thinking of this boy.
Right, yeah.
Just looks at you in this way like, oh, that to me is what teaching's all about.
Well, and exactly. The student gets it. They don't have to sit there and disengage. Mm. And then, I mean, if they're, you know, imagine if I'm a student in whatever, this is year nine, and I'm not getting the work in week two,
mm.
and I think there's, you know, three and a bit terms in front of me, I'm not looking forward to it. You know, but you finally sit there and build that comfort,
yeah.
like it does, but it is, but then, like it's a mountain of work as well. And teachers do it, and we do it over and over, but it's not easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not easy, but I mean, that's why we teach.
And you look at the, let's say the other side of the joyful things of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Some teachers actually look for the things that need to be improved on, which is another good way.
Mm-hmm.
If things aren't going well, then what are we doing to try and change that? Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's one of the approaches that I like doing is if I notice something's not well, I'll stop and we'll rejig it or we'll refocus it or do something else. And the cool thing with teaching is there's more than one way to skin a cat sort of thing. You know, if it doesn't work this way, go this way. And for example, year nines, balancing out equations, finding the value of a missing value somewhere.
Yep.
Showed them two different methods they could use. And mm-hmm. I said, either one, as long as you can justify both. And just to see them pick which one that they feel most comfortable. Then
it blows their mind when there's more than one way, doesn't it?
Oh, this is easy. They go, and when they see their mistake where they haven't balanced it properly, they're like, oh! And when they can self-correct, it's just so good.
But it's, okay, I always love, just go off tangent here, always love. Okay, so next topic is going to be algebra, and the kids just almost lose their minds. Why are we using this here? And then you go, okay, just, you know, using letters to do some problem solving. And then when I actually do it, like, okay, but it must be, like, I'm shocking at spelling. If I sat there and went, I don't know what the equivalent is, but it would do my head in to go, okay, now I've got 3 weeks on this. But if I had someone to just go in and show me the process, I'm like, okay, maybe I don't. And it should be able to, take it back to a contextual thing in real life. But at least if they've got the math thinking, they can sort of build on it from there.
And that's all it is. I think it's like anything, you know, you nurture whatever you want to grow.
Mm.
And whatever you pour into them is what's going to be the output of them.
Yeah.
So the more you put into kids, even difficult kids that struggle, and I've got a couple in one of my classes.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing is that if I can't unlock it, maybe a student next to them can.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this one student go, it's like this. And they went,
what are you doing?
Yeah.
Come on.
And just even that's a joy of watching another kid teach another kid.
Yeah.
Because they don't realize that while they've learnt the concept, they've got it. And I stand back and watch and just listen to see how he's teaching it or she's teaching it. And if there's part of the process that they've sort of interpreted differently, I'll jump in and say, oh. But then if they're carrying on and explaining it step by step, oh, it's like they're doing the job.
Yeah, but that's supposed to be the quickest way to learn.
Yeah.
When you teach someone else, that means it ingrains the knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that. I broke out the whiteboards. I'm slow this year. The mini whiteboards for the first time. Last week, kids are mesmerized by it. But they love showing as well the explaining their thinking and teaching each other, which is big.
Yeah. I told a parent last night that that's a technique that I'll be using in class. And they go, oh, what do you mean? I said, well, I'll teach your kid how to do something later on, a week or 2 weeks later. He or she's got to teach me back. I said, and I'm going to be the worst student ever. So they're going to try and act up. So,
so many toilet breaks.
That's it. That's it, man.
Eating in class. Not bringing any equipment. No, that's good. That's a good technique.
Yeah.
So what, do you got 2 weeks and they got to teach you back?
Yep.
Yeah.
I sort of work on a 2 weeks. So if I can consolidate something within 2 weeks and get them practicing it so they know it forward and back, then the objective is for them to try and teach me. And I act like the worst student ever of understanding. Then I'll deliberately make mistakes and just to see if they have patience.
Okay, because I get students at times to teach on the whiteboard, and I just put them under a bit of pressure so they can get a feeling what teaching's like. Yeah. And so they're like, that's so hard. I'm like, well, okay, this is me being pretty reasonable out as well. There's only one of me. There's 25 to 30 of you.
That's exactly it.
I think the other thing that gives me joy is in the profession, being around like-minded people. And I think you're right. And I think it's the positivity. Any profession, you can get burnt out. Mm. But you need it because teaching so emotions-based, having people that can sort of ignite your fire again is good. And I like sort of working or talking to teachers that may be going through difficulties, but they persevered and they overcome it.
Yep.
I'm like, that's some powerful stuff there.
I agree with you. Put yourself around people who have overcome things and worked their way through things, even when it's tough. But it's just got to be careful to protect yourself against when you're stuck in amongst a group of people that may not be so positive.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so easy to just, even if it's just one word.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the big things is to always try and find a little pearl. And I'm going to reflect back on what this one principle that taught me. And I actually really enjoy this one because it's something that stuck with me all my teaching career. And that's simply every child has a gem inside them. They don't know where it is. They can't even see it themselves. Your job as a teacher is to unearth it and to show them that it's there.
Mm.
And then once it's out and they can see it, then it's hard for them not to see it anymore. So sometimes some of the kids are covered up so much that they don't want to, it's too hard. But once they break off those layers and see that, oh, this is easy.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at a kid today, and this kid would do everything he could not to be there, struggle to understand, telling me, is this the answer? And I'm like, how did you get that answer? He was like, oh, it's this times that and this times that. Then I added this one because it's similar fruits. I'm like, good answer. I like that. And this is from a kid that was like, nah, don't like it, nah, right at the start. So to see kids like that go, this is easy, sir.
Yeah.
That there is my, those are the types of reasons why I enjoy teaching, is seeing those little light bulb moments.
That's what we do it for. And then I'm the same. I think that, money is good in teaching. The lifestyle is great.
Yeah.
But it's helping people, I think.
Yeah.
Which comes back to, just looking at the timer, man, 3 minutes left. You have been incredible steering the ship today.
Oh, brother, I'll tell you what. I just wrote down as much as I could. Whether we got us through it or not, it's all good.
We've done very well.
But, and I looked at some of these other things, bro, and just touch on one more. And this is most of the common responses as to why teachers become teachers.
Yeah.
And looking at the list, a lot of it was things like to make a positive contribution to society, to make a difference in someone's life, be a positive role model, and all these other reasons why. And a lot of those are actual reasons why I know a lot of teachers that get into the profession. Mm-hmm. For me, bro, when I look at what I enjoy with teaching is I like the art of giving back to kids to show that they are actually better than what they think. To me, the joy is showing a kid how outstanding they are. And like even in my language that I'm using today, I'm using the words like, geez, I'm so proud of you lot.
Mm.
You guys are making me so proud to see what you're doing today. 90% of the kids are on task, maybe 10% not. But you praise the heck out of the 90, then all of a sudden the 10 is like, oh.
Which builds that positive environment. Yeah, I remember I was saying it a few episodes ago. When I first started teaching, there was a PD run by an ex-principal who out of the profession on boys in education. And he was saying that they respond to directed praise really well.
Mm.
But they can pick up false praise. And I know I was like that when I was young. Yeah. I could tell people being, but I can see it in class when you're going and not, whatever, it's good work, you did well, overcome that. They appreciate it and they'll show that they'll hold face, or they won't lose face, but it builds something in the head and it starts clicking over. And I think, I haven't checked the John Hattie data for a while, but students overcoming their self-limitations was one on the higher, if not the highest, effector ratings, which I mean, it's a massive study. I can see it in my classroom, just getting students to, overcome their difficulties. And I guess, they're the labels they put on themselves. And especially something like math, where it's probably generally, I think, a more disliked subject. But I think you can teach that skill to then overcome stuff in their lives as well.
Yep. Well, all I can say, brother, is on top of that one is I know that success breeds more success, and I stick by that. Because once you see it, you want more of it. And when you get more of it, you want more of it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just trying to reteach these kids that, you can be successful. It's maybe, but they think success has to be this huge thing, where sometimes success is just a small step forward. and then adding another small step forward the next time. So they don't, they actually, their mindset on what success is to them, sometimes it doesn't have to be a big, big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's the very small things that, that they do better than what
they do. As the great Paul Kelly said, from little things, big things grow.
That's right, bro. Well, all I can say, brother, are we...
You tell me, my man.
Oh, to be honest, I'm not too sure what time we started, but all I can say is, bro, this has been awesome. Is there any final remarks that you have, bro, in regards to how we've been getting on with this topic of joy?
Oh, yeah, I think it's big. I think it's big to reflect on. You know, I think one of the things I was told as a first-year teacher was to any cards or stuff given to you by students, just keep in a box or a folder somewhere. Yeah. I know it sounds a little bit whatever, but I still do that. And to this day, 16 years in, the box has grown. But I'll look at cards occasionally. I'm like, that's because you do. I think I find, especially teaching, you probably there's more negatives than positives in the day.
Yeah.
But if you've got stuff to draw back on and go, yep, I remember that time. I remember going through that situation.
Mm.
I remember those students. Here's the positive stuff. Yeah. It helps me continue on.
Yeah. For me, brother, I think I'll finish off with simply this. If I can just save one kid in the sense of that they became better, just the one kid in the class, let's say, that one kid's success will then breed and it'll just start to filter.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one kid in my year, in one of my year eight classes, who he's my gauge, and if this young kid can do it, everybody else can do it, because this young kid's got all these things that he's got, but he's willing to try, and that's half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just he's reaping the success of just following the process, reaping the success of doing it over and over. Even when he's tired, bro, this kid will get tired, but he'll rise up, give him a little bit of a pep talk, and he'll lift back up again, and he'll just go for it. That's my gauge. That's why I enjoy kids. That's why I enjoy teaching.
And is this as important job in society?
Yeah.
Well, then we'll wrap it up there, my man.
Nice one, brother. Well, thank you very much for another episode, and thank you all for listening. Have a lovely afternoon.
Thank you very much. The Epi has got it. Thank you.